keep them in Afghanistan, to help continue running the heroin, and ultimately do all sorts of nefarious, horrible things, and killing war crimes and crimes against humanity, killing ungodly amounts of innocent people in Afghanistan under the pretext that we're fighting some war against a nation which poses no threat, and extend military might in line with the global spectrum dominance agenda.
Another theory maintains the Biden administration is under pressure from arms manufacturers to extend its stay in Afghanistan. Earlier this month, a congressional group recommended that President Biden extend the May 1st deadline for withdrawing troops. Word is, two of the group's three co-chairs and nine of its 12 plenary members have had financial ties to major defense contractors. The arms industry soaks up more than half of the $740 billion defense budget and will gain the protracted U.S. military involvement overseas. American author James Michener predicted during a visit to Afghanistan in 1955 that Russia and the United States would invade Afghanistan and both would come to regret it. That prediction came true. The Soviets invaded and were forced to leave Afghanistan in disgrace in the 1980s. Now, impartial military experts in the U.S. and its Western allies say the invasion of Afghanistan was a waste of blood and treasure from the very beginning, and that this is an unwinnable war. They also advise the U.S. and other occupiers to seek a face-saving retreat from Afghanistan that has come to be known as a graveyard of empires.
Another controversy for the private U.S. security firm Blackwater. A confidential UN report says Eric Prince, the company's founder and former head, has violated an arms embargo on Libya by sending mercenaries and weapons to support Libyan renegade general Khalifa Haftar. The report, obtained by the New York Times, details how Mr. Prince, a close ally of former U.S. President Donald Trump, deployed heavily armed foreign troops to eastern Libya to assist Khalifa Haftar in the heat of an attack to capture Tripoli in 2019. According to the UN, the $80 million operation included plans for the mercenaries to assassinate selected Libyan commanders. The report raises questions about possible ties between the operation and the Trump administration. Prince did not cooperate with the UN investigation and has rejected having anything to do with the military operations in Libya. However, the report exposes him to possible UN sanctions.
Well, it's all the same thing, that it broke the law and that he was told to do it. I mean, it doesn't really make much of a difference. In fact, the laws, or international law and laws, are meaningless to the United States. And in 2011, when the U.S. led the NATO bombing to destroy the Libyan government and the government there, and for regime change, that was against international law, but it didn't mean so. They break international law all the time. When they level sanctions against countries, these are violations of international law. And so, you know, that's, it's par for the course. It's very telling, though, that they would be doing this use of mercenaries.
Since 2014, two rival seats of power have emerged in Libya, namely the internationally recognized government of Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj and another group based in the eastern city of Tobruk, supported militarily by Haftar's troops. The damning 120-page UN report on Blackwater's contract in Libya was another instance of military intervention by Washington-linked private security companies in the internal affairs of countries around the world. In recent years, there has been a surge in the activity of guns for hire in countries like Yemen, Nigeria, Ukraine, Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Some of the mercenaries have capabilities and equipment on par with elite U.S. troops. But Blackwater is not the only such American firm that is active in conducting high-level overseas operations. Back in May, Venezuela arrested 13 individuals charged with planning an operation in the capital, Caracas, two of whom were American nationals. The U.S. mercenaries admitted that they were arrested during a failed attempt to raid Venezuela's presidential palace and seize President Nicolas Maduro.
We had a casual conversation, I guess you'd call it a verbal contract, giving me some vague mission guidelines on training Venezuelans coming here and putting Maduro on a plane.
The two said they had been working with Jordan Goodrow, an American military veteran who leads a Florida-based security company called Silvercorp USA.
The measures that the United States will take for regime change to advance their interests, very obscene, immoral measures, are revealed all the time. The reason why they like to use mercenaries in a lot of these things and what they do, and then the academy, or this group that used to be Blackwater, got its notoriety for doing things that gave the United States plausible denial.
The involvement of the U.S.-backed troops in these countries wasn't the first, and certainly won't be the last. But does the growing number of operations indicate that the U.S. is opting for a more indirect means of intervening in other nations' affairs?
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, True Asceticism. Genuine asceticism, which is known as zuhud in Arabic, and poverty, which is known as faqr, denote renouncing the unlawful, utter contentment with one's share of wealth, which has been allocated to him by Allah, the source of all wealth, moderately enjoying the lawfully and legitimately assigned property which God has granted to a person, profoundly thanking him for it, subjecting the given wealth to worship purposes, and for pursuing a higher spiritual order of things, that is to say, perceiving wealth as a means rather than an end, keeping the spiritual ailments of greed, extravagance, showing off, haughtiness, and miserliness at bay. In short, a person must be in total control of his assets rather than being controlled by them. And this is something very critical, brothers and sisters out there who are listening to this show. When it comes to your wealth and your property controlling you and your life, that's when it becomes a problem. You should be in control of your property and your wealth. You should be dictating the terms of this relationship between you and the materialism around you and the materialistic blessings of Allah around you. There is nothing wrong with legitimately possessing and using legitimate worldly goods. What is wrong is accumulating, misusing, and finding irresistible the world and its lures. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the topic of true asceticism, also known as zuhud. Zuhd in Islam, asceticism, spirituality, it is a very beautiful concept. Unfortunately, some people have misunderstood it, and they have taken it to abandon this world, go out in deserts and jungles and live there and not fulfill any of their responsibilities. Know that that is not Islamic asceticism. Genuine asceticism and poverty signify one's destitution, impoverishment, and neediness in relation to God, as contrasted to wealth, ghina, which connotates independence and self-sufficiency. Spiritual poverty is a true servant's enduring attribute of which he is always proud, whereas true wealth, that is absolute independence and self-sufficiency, is an attribute of Allah alone. In this sense, the Quran declares, O mankind, you are the poor in your relation to Allah, and Allah is the one free of all wants, worthy of all praise. The task of every true believer, therefore, is to actualize the honorable trait of poverty, that is, dependence on and need of God, and to never covet wealth in the sense of being self-reliant and independent from God and His guidance, light, and compassion. So the poverty in the real sense, the Islamic sense of word, when we say that al-faqru fakhri, according to the Prophet, it means that you are faqir and you are poor in front of who? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Your dependence, your ultimate and absolute dependence is on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Here, the hadith does not mean that you intentionally become poor in the worldly sense of the word. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Texas isn't the only U.S. state that allows its residents to choose between energy providers, but a model of energy system that led to the recent power crisis is built upon a shaky framework, says Sharon Zhang, news writer, in an article published under the heading, Texas Power Grid Deregulation Costs Texans $28 billion over two decades. Stay tuned for more. A new analysis by the Wall Street Journal, WSJ, has found that the deregulation and monopolization of the Texas energy market cost Texas residents $28 billion more than they would have paid under a traditional utility. When Texas changed from fully regulated power generation to the largely deregulated system that's in place today, it began requiring almost 60% of residents to buy from retail utilities rather than a public local utility, says WSJ. Retail providers buy energy and then sell it at a fixed rate and essentially acting as a middleman. Texas isn't the only state in the U.S. that allows its residents to choose between energy providers, but a model of energy system that led to last week's power crisis is built upon a shaky framework. Ironically, the deregulatory effort was supposed to make power cheaper for consumers, while avoiding federal oversight. When a Republican state senator who helped lead the charge for deregulation of Texas greed in 1990s alongside lobbyists and businesses like Enron unveiled the deregulation bill in 1999, WSJ noted that he said, "If all consumers don't benefit from this, we will have wasted our time and failed our constituency. Competition in the electric industry will benefit Texans by reducing monthly rates," said then-Governor George W. Bush, per WSJ. Deregulation, according to these lawmakers' stated intentions, didn't work as planned. From 2004 to 2019, WSJ found, while the average rate paid by Texas residents getting their electricity from traditional utilities was 8% lower than the average across the U.S., the average rate among retail providers was 13% higher than the nationwide rate. As Bush noted, deregulation was also supposed to allow for more competition, but various mergers have left the state with only two main retail electricity providers. A 2014 report by the Texas Coalition for Affordable Power, TCAP, had similar findings to WSJ. At a time, the organization found that residents in deregulated areas paid $22 billion more than people in regulated areas of Texas. A follow-up report in 2019 by TCAP found that the gap had since narrowed, but that the system has a long way to go, said TCAP's executive director. WSJ's findings are in light of some conservatives doubling down on defending the deregulated energy system in Texas after the crisis began. Last week, former Texas Governor Rick Perry said that Texans would rather face the energy crisis that ballooned into what some called a Hurricane Katrina-scale disaster that faced regulation from the federal government. Governor Greg Abbott, meanwhile, went on Fox to blame the energy crisis on renewable energy, even though the crisis was largely due to natural gas generation failures and attacked the Green New Deal. However, in the wake of the disaster, climate experts have pointed out that the Green New Deal could actually be instrumental in helping to prevent future disasters like this one. The winter storm that knocked out the grid in Texas has been attributed to the climate crisis, since climate change causes unusual and often disastrous weather conditions. Though climate scientists have warned of such changes for many years, many energy regulators continue to largely ignore the effects of the climate crisis, including Texas grid operator. In an interview with Texas Monthly, the president of the state's grid operator said, "We don't have any climate specialists on staff. It remains to be seen how much consumers will end up paying out of pocket for the past week of energy price spikes in the state. But experts are saying that they will likely to be paying more. Some residents who chose to get their energy from wholesale providers were hit with bills of up to $16,000 last week for just a few days' worth of energy use. Others may see a rise in their rates eventually.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamadi.
Islamadi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran,
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, brothers and sisters, other life forms. You are listening to Youth Station, only on IRIB English Radio. I am your humble host and friend, I hope, Zainab.
I'm actually really humble.
Lies.
I'm Mehdi. I'm also here trying to cope up with the situation.
Today we're going to be talking about what we've been talking about, globalization, whether it's a good thing. And I feel that we need to put a few things to rest. You can go ahead and say, Zainab, you were right. I was wrong. I accept your apology.
Well, which is why you can sleep at night thinking about how wrong you were.
What we talked about and what we concluded is that globalization should take place. And then you, intentionally or unintentionally, proved my point within your own words, where you said, when Imam Zaman Ajalullah Ta'ala Farajah Sharif reappears, he's going to globalize the world and we're all going to be this one happy village. Everyone's supporting each other. Life is good and you never run out of chai, right?
I never said that. Anyway, yeah, go on.
That was the gist of what you said. And then I said that is why today's globalization is invalid, because that's not what it is. It's just exploitation. It's just colonization. It's just... what's the word? People who are already rich, who are already in power, taking advantage of people who are already poor, who are already oppressed. That's what globalization is today, and it's making me sick, and I'm against it. That's what we've been talking about, and I'm so glad you finally agree with me.
I don't know if I could actually get my point across.
You're going to have to try really hard.
Right. What I'm saying is that globalization, where it is right now, as you said, globalization as it is today, I don't quite understand what you mean. What you're saying is that people are exploiting people in a negative way.
Yeah.
Right. That is just the people. You know, that's just the people.
Bro.
The difference between that globalization, the ideal one that we're talking about, when Imam alayhi salatu wasalam returns, is that the people are different now. You understand? The people literally are different now. And that is what makes that globalization look all rainbows and butterflies. But right now, the globalization is the same. It's just like saying...
globalization is not the same.
The
terminology might be the same, but when Imam alayhi salam returns, and inshallah may it be soon, will the globalization he established in the world be the same as the one we have now? Because if it is, I don't think I want it.
Look, the people are going to change. The mentalities are going to change.
Everything in the world,
right?
Is like that.
Actually, the globalization is going to become more severe. Can you imagine?
The globalization, the way Imam Zaman wants it, will be more severe. Not this globalization. You know
tell
what
me
I'm
the
saying?
Difference. Please tell me the difference. I have lost
no,
you.
No, no, you tell me the difference.
That's exactly what I'm saying. There is no difference. Globalization, you know, what you're saying is like this. You're saying the earth is a bad place, but when
no,
Imam
alayhi salam,
let me finish. You're saying, it's like you're saying, the world is a bad place, but when Imam alayhi salam returns, the world is a good place. I'm sorry, the earth. Planet Earth is a bad place, and when Imam alayhi salam returns, the earth is a good place. Look, the earth is the earth. You know what I'm saying? Globalization is globalization. The way people use it is positive or bad. See?
We've been saying the same darn thing for the past God knows how long.
Now she agrees with me.
So talking about the pros and cons of globalization, I want to understand your understanding of globalization.
Globalization is... accessibility on steroids, you know? It's just... Everything's very accessible, yeah, to everyone. That's something that's a bit scary, you know? People with positive and negative intentions, everyone has got the same access. Some people may have more access. So that's how...
Then that's definitely not what we are having right now. There's no access for everyone.
What do you mean? Right, are you talking about a child in a desert area who's got no... cell phone coverage, no cell phones at all, he's got no water to drink? If you're talking about that person, he's got no access, you're right, but that's got nothing to do with globalization, because that person doesn't even have access to water, which doesn't have
globalization is a process by which I can't see without my glasses, because I am that old.
Go on, prove me right.
Globalization is a process by which business or other organizations develop international influence or start operating on an international scale. That's it. It's business.
Where are you bringing this out from?
I just Googled it.
There is the process of interaction and integration among people, companies, and governments worldwide.
Through business?
No. It's got nothing to do with business. Not necessarily, yeah. Business has got something to do with it, but it's not...
If it's not for business, if it's not for monetary interest, then why would people want to interact and exchange with each other?
Look, if you're talking about an individual with a monetary interest, that's different. But you're talking about for businesses, that it's not specific to businesses.
No, I'm trying to understand that interaction, that an exchange that you say it's a good thing within globalization. If it's not for making money, then why would they exchange at all? So whether they're an individual or they're a company or a firm.
So making money isn't a bad thing in itself, is it? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it in itself? It isn't something bad. When it's bad is when you've got no lines, you've got no morals, right? Well, moral. I'm not going to use the word moral because people are going to argue about what morals actually mean. You've got no boundaries, right? That normally people would have. You do not have those boundaries. When you're that person and you enter this this door, you better not exist, right? But as a normal person, there's nothing wrong with trying to make some money. There's nothing wrong with trying to learn something. There's nothing wrong with trying to teach something, right? These things are
not taking place in globalization.
They are, right?
No.
They,
and you are, again, contradicting yourself, because at first when I asked you what is globalization to you, I needed to clarify that, because now we're connecting it to Dawlatin Karima, the government of Imam Zaman. And if we're going to go that far, we need to really clarify what we're talking about and what Imam Zaman is going to come about and establish.
Look,
because people are going to think that, okay, if Imam Zaman is just going to make the state of world as it is more, then, well, that will suck.
No, look,
so we need to clarify. You said globalization is the accessibility of everything for everyone.
Yeah.
First of all, that was not in the definition we Googled. Second of all, that is not what's going
hold
on
go on,
right
go on
now.
Read it.
What Imam Zaman alayhi salam does, I think, is not globalization, maybe. It's just,
oh my Lord.
It's just justice.
Oh my Lord.
It's just justice, bro. And if it's justice for me to be able to have access to something in the North Pole, then thus it will be.
Yeah. So are you saying that globalization is not going to be there? You remember what I said? I said globalization is going to be there, but it's going to be more severe. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what I said?
I do remember.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Look, if you're saying, what do you mean by the globalization when Imam al-Islam is there? I said that, yeah, it's globalization, but it's more severe, right? Mm-hmm. Right now, what's going on? This is what's going on. I said accessibility on steroids. That's what I said, mm-hmm. right? So what they're saying is simply what I said in other words, right? The process of interaction, integration among people, companies, blah, 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 you know? This is accessibility, right? In other words. This is accessibility, in other words. Oh, my God, what do you mean?
And if you're not...
Let me finish.
If you're not connected to that company, how are you having any access to whatever it is that that company is profiting?
Look, you are taking it completely corporate. Come out of the corporate side of it, please.
Because it's what it is, bro.
No. Look, all right. Do you have friends abroad?
Yes.
Right. Do you talk to them?
Yes.
Are they a company?
Are they what?
Are they a company?
No.
Are you a company?
Maybe.
Oh, my Lord.
No, you are not.
All right. Yeah. You do not have to be a company to have this access. Right. The companies are using it, right, for their own good, which is not, in most cases, the good of the people. Fair enough. But that does not mean that this method is, this phenomena is wrong, you know? Oh, my Lord.
I think that's okay.
It's
you know
so
what?
Simple. I'm just trying
to... It's so simple. He's scratching his head and rubbing his temples.
You know, it's so simple. How do I just make it simpler? It's just like...
Bro?
How do you sip water? Listen. Globalization,
mm-hmm.
If it was not for globalization, we would not be here talking to this mic. Understand?
Okay.
We would not be here. Well, I'm not saying I'm doing that. People who are doing that are spreading a positive message mm-hmm. around the globe.
You're just here to irk me.
No, listen. These people are. They would not be doing what they're doing right now, right? All this is possible because of what?
Globalization.
Thank you. Right. When Imam alayhi salatu wasalam returns, why I say it's severe is because there are no borders anymore now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're not sure, to be honest. We're not sure how it's going to work, you know? There are no borders. There's no, I don't know, like nationality, stuff like that. No, these differences are not there anymore. That means that there's a higher level of globalization based on justice, as you said.
No, look, I don't agree.
Oh, my Lord. Please convince me. Because you just simply say you don't agree, but you don't say anything.
Okay, hold on, because you won't let me.
All right, go on.
Right,
I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to listen to every single word of yours until you finish.
Imam Zaman alayhi salam, ajjala Allah ta'ala farajahu sharif, when he returns, and may that return be hasty. He, like I said, I'm sticking to what I said before. He is going to come and establish justice. And then through that justice, some streaks of globalization are going to take place. You know what I mean?
No.
I mean that in no way is his objective or even one of his achievements globalization. He's just going to come to fill the world with justice and fairness as it was once filled with jawran and some dhulma. I think that was the hadith. I don't know. Oppression and injustice. There we go. So close. That's all Imam Zaman is going to do. Not all, but that's the sole, that's the main purpose and objective of his reappearance. And through that, other blessings are going to come forth. One of it is accessibility. That's it. That's what I'm saying. And because globalization today is so wrong, they call it globalization, right? And they sugarcoat it with this name and with the whole facade that, oh, we want to bring people closer to each other and put accessibility on steroids and everyone should be able to have access to an interest or benefit on the other side of the world. They sugarcoat it that way. What they're really doing is exploiting and colonizing other people like they've always been doing.
Right.
And because that is so bad, it's not going to happen during Imam Zaman. It's just going to be justice, more justice. Everywhere is justice. And it's going to manifest itself in different ways. One of those manifestations of the justice is that accessibility on steroids. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that globalization is going to be there. It's just an element, something that's by the way, just something there when that time arrives. Globalization, from what you said, globalization has not fully occurred right now, which is why some people are benefiting from globalization, others
aren't.
More
than others, right?
Right? Some people are, yeah. If that happens,
no, I'd say, I wouldn't say, again, globalization isn't happening right now. I'd say justice isn't happening right now.
Yeah, but justice is in every single aspect of our lives, and one of these aspects is globalization. So if you try to drag in justice, it's everywhere. So every single thing that we come across every day is wrong, right?
It is, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Then there's nothing right in this world.
Yeah,
For example, what? Giving something away.
Like
to
charity?
Someone, charity, that's not right. If
what?
I see, that's what I'm saying. We can't saying giving away is bad because some people, when they give away, they hit them in the face with that. You know, because there's no justice over there. For example, he gave away something, but he's trying to push it on him,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right.
There's no right. So giving away itself is not wrong, right? But something that's along with giving away is injustice. Lulm. You understand?
Okay.
That's there. So everything has to be with justice. When it's not with justice, that itself is, well, it's not bad, but it has to be with justice.
It becomes
everything.
Dysfunctional.
Yeah, it becomes dysfunctional or, yeah.
It doesn't serve its purpose when it's without justice.
Yeah, so everything is like that.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is globalization in itself is not something bad.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying is, well, there's no justice in it. I'm saying, yeah, there's no justice, but the same case, that's the same case with everything else.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Yeah, anyway.
Yes, we are on the same page, and we do kind of agree with each other. Maybe globalization is a good thing, but because the current version of globalization is so horrible...
The results
are also horrible, and the reason it's horrible is because it's void of justice. And Imam Zaman alayhi salam's purpose will not be creating globalization, it will be justice, right? Okay, so we agree on that much. Thank you so very much for being with us on this episode of Youth Station. Until another greeting, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in
according to the new analysis by the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS, and Americans for Tax Fairness, ATF, America's 664 billionaires now have a combined net worth of $4.2 trillion, a figure that stands in staggering contrast to the economic pain being felt by countless families across the U.S. as joblessness, uninsurance, and hunger remain sky high. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jake Johnson, news writer. This article is published under the heading, As U.S. Mourns 500,000 Lives, Billionaires Gained $1.3 Trillion During Pandemic. Here's more. The United States has recently mourned the devastating milestone of 500,000 lives lost to the coronavirus. A recent report shows that the nation's billionaires have seen their collective wealth grow by $1.3 trillion since the deadly pandemic began last year. According to the new analysis by the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS, and Americans for Tax Fairness, ATF, America's 664 billionaires now have a combined net worth of $4.2 trillion, a figure that stands in staggering contrast to the economic pain being felt by countless families across the U.S. as joblessness, uninsurance, and hunger remain sky high. It is unseemly that the billionaires have experienced such gains as we mark a half a million lives lost, and millions more who have lost their health, wealth, and jobs. Chuck Collins, director of the program on inequality at IPS, said in a statement, taxing those who have experienced windfall wealth gains to pay for COVID relief and recovery is a matter of equity and justice. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, and SpaceX founder Elon Musk saw their wealth grow by $76.3 billion and $158 billion, respectively, between March 18, 2020 and February 19, 2021, bigger gains than any other U.S. billionaire. Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, saw his net worth jump by $41 billion during that period. Even as congressional Republicans try to nickel and dime suffering Americans by opposing Biden's American Rescue Plan, including its $1,400 relief checks, American billionaires have reaped $1.3 trillion in pandemic profits, said ATF Executive Director Frank Clement. The need for the kind of fair share tax program Biden ran and won on becomes clearer every day as billionaire wealth balloons while working family hopes deflate. The U.S., which has the highest coronavirus death toll in the world, reached 500,000 lives lost to COVID on Monday, February 22nd. About 1 in 670 Americans have died of COVID-19, which has become a leading cause of death in the country, along with heart disease and cancer, and has driven down life expectancy more sharply than in decades, the New York Times noted. While declining cases and an improving vaccine rollout have prompted some optimism, the grim milestone and a still rising death toll served as urgent reminders of how much work remains to be done to bring the catastrophe pandemic under control. We are still at about 100,000 cases a day. We are still at around 1,500 to 3,500 deaths per day. The cases are more than 2.5-fold times what we saw over the summer, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, told NBC earlier this month. It's encouraging to see these trends coming down, but they are coming down from an extraordinarily high place. The number of U.S. citizens filing for unemployment increased to 38.6 million since March 18th, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Over the same 2 months, the wealth of U.S. billionaires have surged $434 billion, an increase of 15%. The combined fortunes of Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg alone grew by nearly $60 billion during these 2 months, according to a new analysis jointly released by Americans for Tax Fairness and the Institute for Policy Studies, which released Billionaire Bonanza 2020 in April to examine billionaire wealth during the first month of the pandemic. Between March 18th and May 19th, the total net worth of the 600-plus U.S. billionaires rose from $2.948 trillion to $3.382 trillion. In March, these were 614 billionaires on a Forbes list. There are 632 months later, including newcomer Kanye West at $1.3 billion. Among other COVID-19 victims are the more than 16 million Americans who have likely lost employer-provided healthcare coverage. Low-wage workers, people of color, and women have suffered disproportionately in the combined medical and economic crisis. Billionaires are overwhelmingly white men. Between March 18th and May 14th, 2020, over 36 million U.S. workers lost their jobs, with 2.98 million claims in announcement. Over these same 8 weeks, U.S. billionaires saw their wealth increase by $368.8 billion, a 12.51% increase. On March 18th, U.S. billionaires had a combined $2.947 trillion, down from $3.111 trillion a year earlier, according to Forbes' annual Global Billionaire Survey. As of May 14th, total U.S. billionaire wealth has increased to $3.316 trillion. In the last 8 weeks, 14 new billionaires joined the U.S. billionaire list, which increased from 614 to 628. Even with a decline in markets, Elon Musk's wealth increased $3.5 billion in last week since May 6. Jeff Bezos' wealth increased by $900 million and Eric Yuan saw his wealth increase by $800 million. Mike Bloomberg saw his wealth increase by $400 million.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Cortex. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a televised speech delivered on January 8, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, on the anniversary of an uprising led by the people of the city of Qom on January 9, 1978.
A few points about the Barjam, JCPOA, and the reductions in the commitments of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The second point is that the decision by the Majlis and the administration to cancel the Barjam commitments is the right decision. It is a completely reasonable, logical, and acceptable decision. When the other side fails to honor all of its Barjam commitments, then it does not make sense for the Islamic Republic to honor all of its commitments either. That is why, since some time ago, they have gradually begun to withdraw from some commitments. Recently too, they have withdrawn from some others. If they return to their commitments, we'll return to ours as well. I have said this from the beginning, since the very beginning. When the issue of the Barjam arose, I said, commitment in return for commitment. We will make moves in proportion with theirs. Whatever we are supposed to do should be done equally by the other side. Well, this was not done in the beginning, but now it must be done.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Another issue that would not be bad to be discussed, I have written it down, is that I have heard some people have questions about my comments in a television program recently broadcast. In that program, I said that a young Hezbollahi administration should hold office, and I said in another time that it would not be a good idea to eliminate the veterans. And such people believe that these two comments do not add up. However, I would tell them that they are not completely compatible and they do not contradict one another in any way. Notice that I firmly believe in reliance of young forces, and this belief is not related to the present time. I have believed this since long ago. Trust in young forces means that firstly, some important managerial tasks should be entrusted to youth, and secondly, we should welcome some of the innovative ideas that they put forward, and also their energy and enthusiasm.
Alhamdulillah.
around the world with reporters.
The racial disparities in who gets a dose of the desperately wanted coronavirus vaccine continues to roil the United States. African Americans compose 12% of the U.S. population, yet they have only received 5% of the vaccines. 60% of America is white, and they have gotten 60% of the vaccines. The mainstream media is repeatedly blaming the problem on African Americans by emphasizing their mistrust of the federal government due to a shocking national history of medical experimentation on black communities. However, the small share of whites and blacks who say they refuse to ever get vaccinated is the same, 14%. Multiple studies point to a simpler explanation. Vaccines are overwhelmingly being sent to white neighborhoods. In the United States, vaccines are being issued at places like pharmacies, clinics, and hospitals. But perpetual underinvestment in lower class and non-white areas means many black communities simply don't have this medical infrastructure. Similarly, African American and poor neighborhoods don't have adequate schools, roads, businesses, work opportunities, and many other basic requirements for healthy living. Since almost the start of the pandemic, it's been clear that non-whites are drastically overrepresented in the so-called essential worker occupations, and that non-whites are 4 times more likely to be hospitalized by corona and 3 times more likely to die from it.
And then we also have a lot of our Southside hospitals that are closing and can't meet the demand if they were to get the shipments. They don't have anywhere to store them. So that's another reason. A lot of our clinics are being closed in the inner communities. It's time to get the boots on the ground. It's time to show faith by coming into the black communities, setting up pop-up shops for vaccines.
Latino Americans are getting only 11% of vaccines, despite being 18% of the population. The failure to equally share coronavirus vaccines with all classes is expected to further exacerbate the nation's long-standing socioeconomic inequalities, which the pandemic continues to reveal. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Like millions of other young people in the EU, Charles Prevost feels he has not been given adequate support by authorities during the pandemic. In order to survive, the entrepreneur has purchased his own hot dog stand, which he operates in Brussels.
I was working on a restaurant, I was managing a restaurant, and I lost my job, and I was like, what I can do next, what we can do, what the young people, the young men, the young ladies in this world, in this city, in this country, what they can do, because we don't have any help.
As businesses continue to fold in the EU and millions lose their jobs, people feel there is no hope. Only 6.4% of the bloc's population have received a vaccine. That's tiny compared to the UK and US. A two-day video conference involving EU leaders has just concluded. They are very concerned about COVID-19 mutations.
The B117 is by now in all member states but one. The South African variant is in 14 member states and the Brazilian variant in 7. So there's a lot of challenge ahead of us.
Variants are allowed to flourish when people are not vaccinated. Experts say the bureaucratic structures of the EU have resulted in citizens having to wait far too long for vaccines. However, EU leaders say producers are not keeping their promises in terms of supply.
We want more predictability and transparency